Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 11 of the World Hoppers podcast. I am Cheyenne, and I am here with my co-hosts, Alfonsina and Ilana.
Hello there. This is Alfin here.
Yeah, and hi, this is Ilana.
Today, we will be discussing the Cell essay, as well as all the Cosmere aspects in Elantris and Emperor. So we're going to do the same thing we did for the Schedule essay, where we start without spoilers, and then we'll transition to the full spoilers for everything else.
Yeah, so just to clarify, this is covering spoilers for all of the Cell universe, like, yes. Not just this essay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So for now, until we next give a warning, spoilers for Elantris and Emperor Cell, and, well, Hope of Elantris, but...
Yeah, it's the same
that's
as Elantris.
Elantris anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't look as if it has that much Cosmere content on it, but it actually has. It really does. And it's very relevant. So,
yeah, and it's also like very niche, yeah. So you won't notice it the first time around because that's the way Brandon built it, because he wasn't sure doing what he was trying to do at that time, like before the MCU was out and all that. It was pretty risky, and so he was building this like hidden expanded universe without like bringing it to the forefront.
Yeah, and I think that's why it's interesting with the essay, because you see that he uses a lot of, like, greater Cosmere terminology throughout it. I don't think we see that as much in Elantris, where he was trying to stay, like, very neutral Cosmere-wise. And then you get to the essay, and it's just, like, cognitive, spiritual, like everything.
Shards.
Yeah, shards. Like, the silver light. I'm like, what the heck is
Vax.
This?
Okay, no, Vax didn't the Arzar Kingdom, but yeah.
Yeah. It's like you almost need, like, a dictionary while you're going through to, like, cross-reference.
Yeah, so I think it's useful, like we did last time, to, like, go through paragraph by paragraph and discuss it.
Yes.
Okay, sounds good.
Yeah, so the Cellish system. Central to this system is a planet of Cell, home to multiple empires that uniquely have remained somewhat ignorant of one another. It is a willful kind of ignorance, with each of the three great domains pretending that the others are mere blips on the map, barely worth notice. So, none of this is really new information. We have the Fjordal Empire, we have the Rose Empire, and there are two main theories. Either considering the domain of the Elantrians with, like, Teode and... Arilon, thank you, to be another one of these great three domains, or the theory that there's a third one, because Brandon has talked about, like, the inspirations for Elantris, and how the Rose Empire is very, like, Eastern, like, Asian-inspired, and then we have this section with Fjordal and Arilon and Teode that is very, like, European-inspired, and how there's, like, another one that's inspired, presumably, by Africa or Australia. Like, we don't know. And I don't think we will find out until the 30 Elantris book, because we know the next one is set on Fjordal.
We don't have any map other than the Arilon and Teode region.
No.
So we are lucky.
I think we do have a part with the map of like the Rose Empire. Wait.
Oh, I haven't seen any map about the Rose Empire.
Yeah, let me. It should be on the Copper Mines.
Yeah. But it's definitely not something easy to find. We have the map of the city of Elantris, the map of the region that covers Arilon, Duladel, and some arrow that just says to Teode, or Teode, however you say that. But I think that it's a very intentional choice that Brandon has been making these years about keeping the geographic distribution of the planet not defined for the moment.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting that in this, like, first small paragraph, it already answers a lot of the questions that I had about Hope of Elantris. Uh-huh. Not Hope of Elantris. Emperor's Soul.
Emperor's Soul.
Because I went into Emperor's Soul not knowing anything about this essay. And so I was like, oh my gosh, there's a whole other empire. And I wonder if they know about, like, the Fjordan Empire. And I wonder if there's anything else. And so, like, already they're like, no, there's three. And they know about each other. They just don't acknowledge it. Like, that type of thing.
They're playing the fool.
Already kind of... Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very funny.
They're like, we just want to pretend that we are the greatest, and so we're just going to pretend that there's no other competition, regardless of if there is or not.
Well, besides, those are not countries, those are empires, so there's like a whole self-importance to an empire, self-arrogance, let's say, if when you are an empire. You're not just a country, you are an empire. So It has like this sense of something that is unique or something that covers the totality of whatever you're at. Like in the final empire, the actual empire covered like most of the relevant continents. So in here, having three empires is like,
Yeah, it's definitely a different take on empire than in Brandon's previous books.
Mm-hmm. So we have the map of Erelon and we have the map of Cyclop, which is essentially Opalon, but we don't have a map of the whole world, which is what I was just looking for.
Yeah, and we can get more into this when we get to like the full Cosmere spoilers, because I have a few things to say about that. But are we ready to move on to the rest of the... Okay. The planet itself facilitates this, as it is larger than most, with its size at around 1.5 Cosmere standard and gravity at 1.2 Cosmere standard. Vast continents and sweeping oceans create a diverse landscape with an extreme amount of variation on this one planet. Here you will find both snow-covered plains and expansive deserts, a fact I would have found remarkable upon my first visit had I not by then discovered that this was a natural state of many planets in the Cosmere. Which just really makes me question where Chris comes from. Because I'm like...
Tal'Dane.
This sounds... Dark side. Well, yeah, I know that, but I don't know much about Tal'Dane.
Oh, Tal'Dane is interesting.
I'm like, this sounds just kind of like Earth, where it's like, yeah, you've got a wide variety of different ecosystems and biomes, and any of us would kind of expect that. So the fact that Chris doesn't, I'm like,
Tal'Dane is a very interesting planet. We'll get to it more in the Cosmere spoilers, if you remind me, so that I can elaborate on this. But Tal'Dane is tidally locked between two stars. Oh. So on one side, it's permanent day side, and the other one is permanent dark side, because the other side is smaller. And so Chris is from dark side, but she's been to day side, which is where white sand happens. And white sand is essentially mostly all desert. And the flora in dark side, we've never seen it, but it's very, very strange.
Interesting.
I mean, it's a very unique planet, and it makes sense that Chris wouldn't be expecting this because of just how strictly divided the ecosystems on Tal'Dane are because of its position as a tidally locked planet.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, just a quick disclaimer, now that we see that this essay is written in the first person, maybe you already knew that or you remembered, but if you're listening and don't remember, all of these essays are written by the same person who wrote all the Ars Arcanum, who is a worldhopper, and actually who is a scholar. She's named Chris, as my partner said. She's from Tal'Dane, and we see her around in the Cosmere, so she's a relevant character, but we see that she has a very analytical way to describe everything in this essay. So these are kind of scientific papers, kind of.
Yeah, she is a scientist. We see her working out with science in White Sand.
Is she like an anthropologist or an archaeologist, but about the magic rather than the culture? I think she's an anthropologist.
Yeah, she's an arcanist.
Arcanist, that's it.
So arcanists are the people who study the magics in the Cosmere, which is different. Oh my god, Brandon has confused these terms.
Yeah, he's not a robot. After all, he's a human.
No.
He makes mistakes.
Yeah, but it makes things a bit confusing. It's not exactly a term for people, but there's a difference between invested arts and arcana, and it's complicated.
Of course it is.
I mean, it's basically the same thing, only that I don't know why Brandon uses it differently.
Because it's Brandon and he has to make our lives as difficult as possible.
Oh, you haven't heard of the Atium Wub, have you?
Oh, probably not. Is this like the Kaladin spear thing?
It's worse.
Oh, no.
The stream this past weekend. Oh my god. The
I swear.
Wob. Like, that one wob set off an entire Shardcast episode. I think they're recording it in the new year. Yeah.
This man, I swear, just sits in his lair and plots different ways to make his fans tear their hair out. Like,
I love that chaotic energy.
Yeah, like, we appreciate the work, Brandon, but just give us a break. Just a short, short reprieve.
So, Krista is an arcanist, and she studies the magics of the Cosmere, well, the invested arts.
Yeah, she's writing this essay.
Like, she's a scientist, so she's the author of all the essay and all the Ars Arcanum at the end of, like, each book. And we've seen her a couple of times in
she's in the cover of White Sand. Novels. She's literally in the cover.
I mean, yeah, that's where she's from. But we've seen her in other books as well.
Of course. Next paragraph goes like, Cell is notable for being dishardic, one of few planets in the Cosmere to attract two separate shards of Adonalsium, Dominion and Devotion. These shards were extremely influential in the development of human societies in the planet, and most of their traditions and religions can be traced back to these two. Uniquely, the very languages and alphabets used today across the planets were directly influenced by the two shards. I love this piece of information.
Yeah. I don't want to get too much into why the planet is dishardic and why that fact is unique, but we definitely see the language thing, and we definitely see the influence of Dominion and Devotion on other societies. I mean, they're the reason the Elantrians exist, but also, like, they power the many different magic systems of Cell in different ways.
Yeah, and you can also see it just through, like, the social aspects of the books. Mm-hmm. A lot of the Fjordans are focused on, like, Dominion.
Dominion.
Where you have, like, Arlon and Teod that are more focused on Devotion and, like, devotion to their people and stuff like that. And so it's just embedded within the, like, culture of the society as well, which I find interesting.
Yeah, and I think that's also, like, part of the reason why they're, like, empires on Cell, because, well, Dominion. That's what empires do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really interesting how, this is a point I was going to make later, but how the people that are taken by the Sheod are always particularly devoted to something. And we know, like, the Aeons are also, like, built around the power provided by devotion. And so it's really, really interesting. Like, yeah, even if we don't see much of the magic.
I didn't even know that until, like, I was just looking at our notes, that that's how people get taken by the Sheod.
Yeah.
And it makes so much sense.
If you think about it, like, they had all, like, one reason to make them just particularly devoted to something chosen by the Riad.
And that's why it was not easy, but makes sense for them to, like, continue doing their jobs and the things that they were devoted to in the first place. And, like, that's how they kind of push through that pain. So I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, like, I'm not saying it's confirmed or it's canon or
anything. Oh, no, but it just makes a lot
makes
of sense.
So much sense. Honestly, like, what other explanation could there be? And, like, that's also related to a comment Chris makes in the Ars Arcanum, which we'll talk about later, regarding initiation.
Yeah. Even if it's not the same thing that they were, like, devoted to previously, finding something else to devote yourself to was what gave them the power and the energy to push through. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, I fully and wholeheartedly accept that, like, theory or headcanon.
Me too.
Yeah. Next. I believe that early on, the Shards took an unconcerned approach to humankind, and society was shaped by the slow, steady discovery of the powers that permeated the landscape. It is difficult to determine for certain, however, as at some point in the distant past, both Dominion and Devotion were destroyed. Their investiture, their power, was splintered, their minds ripped away, their souls sent into the beyond.
So, Che, can you...
This is an interesting paragraph.
You remember... Oh, yeah.
There's
definitely
a lot to unpack there.
So that's why I want to ask Che if she remembers the definition of splintered.
Yes. We know Adonalsium was shattered, and I'm not going to get too much into this because of Cosmere spoilers and, like, why Dominion and Devotion were splintered. We'll talk about that later. So the shards, like, can also, like, not only change, like, vessels, which in this case are Aeon and Sky, but also be destroyed, which is splintered. And so there's several kinds of splintering. One, like, a willful, like, splintering that the shard, like, separates, like, a part of themselves to, like, create another, like, invested entity in on Roshar. It's the Spren. Here, it's the Skazi and the Seant. Those are splinters of Dominion and Devotion, respectively. But Dominion and Devotion are splintered completely, and the power is too dispersed for another vessel to take it up, at least presumably, because there are some things we'll get into later when we talk about why this happened, because that's needs full Cosmere spoilers.
Yeah.
But, like, their power, like, isn't held by a vessel anymore.
So that sets a pretty much terrible situation regarding the shards on the planet. That's a tragic situation, a dangerous one, that explains some of the, let's say, anomalies that we see going on with the magic users, the Elantrians. In the main book.
Yeah, definitely. So the next paragraph says, I am uncertain whether their power was left to ravage the world untamed for a time or was immediately contained. This all happened during the days of human prehistory on Cell. So basically just going through and setting up the timeline to let us know that we don't have records like as this happened from that time, although it would be fascinating if we did.
Yeah, and like this gets to a very like common misconception that people have about Elytras, that people think that the chasm happened when Dominion and Devotion were splintered.
No.
That's false. That happened thousands of years ago. The chasm only happened 10 years before the story starts.
Yeah, that was just like an earthquake.
Yeah, that was just a regular earthquake. And since the magic was so tied to the land for reasons we'll get into later, it changed the way the magic works.
So, going on with the essay. At this point, the bulk of the investiture that made up the powers of Dominion and Devotion is trapped on the cognitive realm. Tan-tan-an-an! Collectively, yeah. These powers, which have a polarized relationship, chan-chan, are called the door, sorry. Forced together as they are, trapped and bursting to escape, they power the various forms of magic and soul, which are multitude. So,
this has implications.
Polarized relationship, we know that. We have talked about something like that. There's a similarity with stuff that we have been speaking in previous episodes. And the cognitive realm. We know that place as well.
So, for those of you who haven't listened to our schedule episode, or who need a reminder, the Cosmere has three realms, the cognitive, the physical, and the spiritual. The physical is where we are now, where everything happens. The cognitive is the reflection of like where our thoughts are, the way...
Similar to the Platonic theory of ideas.
Yes, exactly. And then the spiritual is like the perfect place where the spiritual realm is all kind of messed up. But
we know very little, but we only know that it's the place in which your spirit is, which is kind of no information at all.
Like,
I mean, spiritual realm.
Version of like everything, right? Mm-hmm. It's related to spirit webs and all that.
And that's also where like the bulk, like the body of the shards.
Yes.
Exist. Because once you ascend, your body turns to mist and you ascend into the spiritual realm.
Yeah, the power of the shards is concentrated in the spiritual. And there are parts in the cognitive, parts in the physical, well, magic, of course. But for the most part, in every other case, the magic of the shard, well, the investiture is all in the spiritual realm. And the problem on Cell is that when they got splintered, all that power got pushed into the cognitive realm. And so the cognitive realm, this solves so many mysteries people had for so long. Regarding Cell, I know that as someone on our Discord, like, this makes no sense, and I was like,
it does, but wait.
Yeah, for the longest time, it was such a big mystery, until we got our Kingdom Unbounded, which explained everything. And so I was like, I know it's frustrating, read our Kingdom Unbounded. And like, so for so long, like, so many people were trying to theorize, like, why is magic on Cell tied to the place? Why? Like, the magic system works very weirdly, and it's because of this. The cognitive realm does have location, and it's how, like, world hoppers travel from planet to planet. And so, with everything, they push into the cognitive realm rather than the spiritual realm, where there is no place, no time, no anything. The magic, like, became tied to the land, and the cognitive realm on Cell is incredibly dangerous. I mean, people can go through there. We have evidence of that with Hoyt and all that. But it's basically just like a giant plasma storm that will destroy anything that gets in its way. And that's also part of like why on the Roshaaran map of Shadesmar, which is the cognitive realm for Roshaar, there are like expanses and like Nexi. So there's one that's called Expanse of the Densities that's referring to Cell's subastral, where it's incredibly dense because so much of the investiture is concentrated in the cognitive realm. It wants to escape.
Right, and yeah. As I said, this is definitely an anomaly because everything has to, like, in the Cosmere mechanics, we know that everything has to exist in the three realms at the same times. Like, every object that you see, every person that you read about, every character, they exist in the three places, all tied together. The more invested entities, they have the ability to, like, move in between those different planes, or they can affect them in different ways, but definitely the shards, their power that needs to exist with a conscious in the spiritual realm to be able to touch mm-hmm. the cognitive and the physical. So the fact that these two shards, not one, but two, these two shards were splintered, and on top of that, they were shot into the cognitive realm, that makes like a huge tornado of magic and disaster and chaos. And yeah, as Chase said, this is actually something that explains and makes us understand why there was such an entropic vibe coming out of the door whenever we saw Rauden like making these drawings, because the power mm-hmm. is trapped. It's like a system in tension. It's something that is metastable, which means that should not be stable, but it's stabilized by force and by some external conditions, which is basically the shards being in that place in which they are not supposed to be.
Yeah, and so Chris explains this like in the next couple of paragraphs of the essay. Because the cognitive realm has distinct locations, unlike the spiritual realm, where most forms of investiture reside, magic on Cell is very dependent upon physical position. In addition, the roles of perception and intent are greatly magnified on Cell, to the point that language or similar functions directly shapes the magic and is pulled from the cognitive realm and put to use. Which is essentially what we've just been saying about the way magic is used, so.
We got a bit ahead of ourselves, but it's hard not to when you're discussing such giant concepts like this, that separating it down into the parts given is a bit difficult. But I suppose I think this is one of the reasons it's a great time to become a Cosmere fan, is because you have mm-hmm. stuff like this out here to answer a lot of these questions now. Not that we don't always have more questions.
Oh, yeah, believe me, we do.
Yeah.
It's frustrating when Brandon consistently raffles us. Fine.
And some historical little detail too. This book came out in 2017, if I am not wrong.
Yeah, I can remember.
I remember I bought it over the same time I was pre-ordering Oathbringer. Yeah, I'm sure that was 2017. And this huge book is a compendium of different stories with different essays for different systems, and this very essay that we're talking and we're discussing right now is the first thing that you read when you open the book. So in my case, for example, I didn't do any such of a particular Cosmere reading order. I was just buying the books, and this came out. Oathbringer wasn't out yet, so I was like, okay, I'm gonna read this. And I opened the first page, and it was this, the Salish System essay. It's definitely a lot. I mean, it's a very heavy start, and it's basically everything you want out of this book called Arcanum Unbounded, and the Cosmere explanations is beautiful.
Mm-hmm. So are we ready to go on to the next paragraph, or do we have more to discuss here?
Yeah.
Okay. So the overlap between language, location, and magic on the planet has become so integral to the system that subtle changes in one can have profound effects on how the door is accessed. Indeed, I believe that the very landscape itself has become invested to the point where it has a growing self-awareness in a way unseen on other planets in the Cosmere. I do not know how this happened or what the ramifications will be. What?
I love
the planet itself is becoming self-aware?
This is so a tribute to Asimov and a particular story of Asimov that Branderson refers to in the acknowledgments at the beginning of the book. But yeah, I mean, basically here, leaving Isaac Asimov aside, I love the idea, because this idea about something influencing the land so much that it starts getting a conscious is so sci-fi. So sci-fi, but turned into fantasy. And basically, this is what we saw in Elantris. Mm-hmm. This is what we saw in Elantris.
Yeah, I mean, like, it makes sense because of the way magic and investiture is so tied to place on Cell. So it's very strange, but like, it tracks, because we always see reflections of like places in the cognitive realm, right? And when people aren't thinking about a place, you won't see that reflection as strongly in the cognitive realm, which is what allows world hoppers to walk like light years through the cognitive realm and go from planet to planet. On Cell, that's even more exacerbated because of all the investiture that's stuffed into the cognitive realm. And so it makes sense that that's like bleeding through into the land itself, and that's why it's becoming self-aware.
Yeah, that's going to be super interesting to see where he goes with that.
If I remember correctly, there was like something about, I don't know if a conscious, but at least an intention a desire to be in use that came out of the door whenever Rowden was trying to figure out how to use the magic that he had, but in a kind of broken way. So, yeah, I see a wink to that in this paragraph, something that we see in Elantris, which came out like 11 years before this book. Oh, and the next paragraph is juicy.
Oh, the next paragraph is, and it's going to be hard to talk about without mentioning Secret History, which you haven't read.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I will get on that.
Okay, go, go.
Make our lives easier.
No, don't worry. I really want, it's Secret History.
It's a story that is secret.
We just need to be faster recording so that we can get there.
Okay, so you want to go out?
I have begun to wonder if something greater is happening on Cell than we at the Universities of Silverlight, as we have guessed, something with origins lost in time. Perhaps the Ire, am I saying it right?
Irie,
thank you. Perhaps the Irie know more, but they are not speaking on the topic and have repeatedly denied my request for collaboration. So, Cosmere organizations, you guys.
Yes.
I was going to say, is this our first secret organization on Zell?
I don't know how secret it is. It is kind of secret.
Okay, so the Silverlight Universities.
Rather than secret.
Yeah. We've mentioned them, I think, in our last essay episode. Mm-hmm. Silverlight is this university in the cognitive realm. Chris helped found it, and that's where like the scholars for the Cosmere are like, concentrated. It's fun. The Irie, however, are far more mysterious. We actually see them in Secret History. I will say that, without going into too many spoilers. And
we heard them being mentioned in Rhythm of War.
Oh, yeah, we did.
Mm-hmm.
There's this organization coming from Cell who, like, are pre-Rayod Elantrians. I will say that.
Yeah.
And
so
they
very
have
old.
Very... Yeah, incredibly. And they have a very interesting purpose. And they meddle a lot, not as much as the Ghostbloods, but they do their fair share of meddling, and we know very little about them.
So basically, big drop of information in here. We learn about this university, which is located in the Cog. We learn that Chris comes from there in this little paragraph, because she says, universities. Mm-hmm. And
I mean, she's
also
from Tal'Dane, but she's...
Sure.
She hasn't been in Tal'Dane for a long time, as we will see in the Tal'Dane essay.
And we can be sure that she's very heavily involved with these universities of Silverlight. And then the Irie. The Irie, this organization from Cell, but very ancient and very mysterious. Very ruffled by Branderson, sadly.
Yeah.
Oh, and apparently they are as mysterious in-world because they are denying the... They don't want to collaborate with the Silverlight universities, which we know very little about, but I am very sure that they are an important place. I mean, one does not simply say, I don't want to collaborate with you, Silver University person, right? So they probably have their reasons to do stuff that way, these Irie guys. And yeah, keep them in mind whenever you read Secret History. Remember this.
Yeah. So, brief mention should be given to the entities known as the Saeons and Skazi, splinters of self-aware investiture who have developed human-like mannerisms. I believe there is a link between them and the puzzle of Cell's nature.
Crazy theory material in here.
Yeah, honestly, there is still lots of mysteries about the Saeons and Skazi. Especially like with the Skazi, because we only ever see one of them in the 10th anniversary edition of Elantris.
And yeah.
What we do know is that they're essentially like the equivalent of Spren. They are splinters of devotion and dominion, and they've become like self-aware, because that's what lots of investiture does when it's concentrated in one place, become self-aware.
So, do we want to go into the next one?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, just making sure we don't have anything else to say. So, the rest of the system is of little relevance. Though there are a number of other planets, only one exists in a habitable zone. It is barren, inhospitable, and prone to terrible dust storms. Its proximity to the sun, Mashe, I'm guessing, makes it uncomfortably warm, even for one who has spent a good portion of her life on the day side of Tal'Dane.
Here she speaks a little bit about herself.
Yeah, there really isn't much to say about this other planet. I'm curious why she mentioned it.
I know. I feel like that's like kind of Chekhov's gun. Like he's putting something in here, and then we're gonna see it later. Like,
I don't know, because I have read a little bit about the nature of the solar systems in our real life universe, and there's like a thing called the green zone, which is a green that you can like that you can determine around the planets, a star such as this, the sun.
Yeah, kind of like the Goldilocks planet.
Exactly. Like something that it's an area that depends on the size of the sun that you have in a system, in a solar system, and the orbits that the planets make around it. So whenever you see in astronomy a new solar system, you have to check if there's like a green zone and if you have any planet with habitable attributes on that green zone. The Earth in our solar system is on the very middle of the green zone. So it's like we are perfect. In the perfect area to have developed life. So since Brandon has like purposely make Chris someone who is a scientist and who is making these essays with this scientific paper vibe, I think that this is a part of that he is like explaining, because attached to the essays we have a little picture, a very beautiful art for the solar systems of each of these systems in the Cosmere, and we see different planets, and well, Cell is in what I assume is the habitable zone of the solar system. So she, I think she takes the time to mention that there's another one, but with questionable conditions because of the storms and the dust. But maybe it is something else. I don't know. If it's a part of the world building of making Chris a scientist, then I think it's very, very well done. But if it's something else, well, we will raffle that.
And that's, yeah, definitely.
That's it. That's this Salish system essay.
Yeah, so I think with this, we're going to have to transition into full Cosmere spoilers. Because, yeah, there isn't much else to talk about without Cosmere spoilers.
Yeah, which is odd because, like, the Cell system is not one that has that many, like, Cosmere... Oh,
implications.
Thank you.
Yeah, yes. This isn't Roshar.
Oh my gosh, but, no. But yeah, and yet there's a lot in this essay that kind of hints at things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, if you haven't read the rest of the Cosmere, or you don't feel comfortable listening to the spoilers, then we thank you for listening. We hope you had a good time. And you can always come back and listen to the rest whenever you have read more.
And if you haven't, you can always go into our Discord and talk about it, ask for, I don't know, someone to talk about, to hype about, someone to ask for fan arts without getting spoiler googling stuff. And basically like discuss.
We have Coppermind and Arcanum sections on the Discord that aren't very used, but you can use to ask questions so that you won't have to look yourself on the website and someone else who
That can be is treacherous
can find what you need without you running the risk of spoilers.
So we hope to see you at the Discord, and thank you for listening.
And for those who have decided to stay, whether you are brave and not afraid to spoilers, or a spoiler friend like myself, or if you are up to date, now the juicy part begins.
Yeah. There is so much. So, just want to revisit the essay itself quickly before we go into Elantris and Emperor's Soul and all that.
Yes.
So, the main thing with the shards, dominion and devotion. I think part of the reason why Chris says it's one of the few planets to attract two separate shards, even though if to us as readers that might be strange, considering, well, almost all the planets we've seen have been dishardic.
We've seen very few singular shard planets.
Yes, I think that's because of the pact that the shards made with each other, which Endowment mentions in her letter to Hoid in Oathbringer. They were supposed not to mess with each other, and then yet some of them did. Aeon and Scott are notable. Tanavest and Coravelimavest are two, and, well, Aetian Laras.
Yeah, which are all major parts of the Cosmere. So I guess to us readers, it seems like, well, obviously every planet has at least, like, two shards.
But, I mean, we still have lots of them missing. I mean, Ambition, we have Autonomy, we have our, like, newly well, at the time of recording this, well, not discovered, but we've newly found out about whimsy, invention, valor, and mercy.
Mamma mia, whimsy.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Oh, that's gonna be interesting. We're still missing two other shards. We have no idea what happened with them. But from what I gather from Wobbs and the like, I don't think any of them settled together. So it makes sense, Chris is saying, it's rare for dishardic planets to exist, even if to us readers that it'll be like the total opposite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of the norm for us. Because, I mean, whenever I read that it was, like, odd, I was like, wait, what? What are you talking about? But it definitely makes sense knowing that Chris has a wider view of the Cosmere than we do and, like, knows things that we don't.
I love how indignant that letter sounded. I mean, Endowment was furious that nobody respected the pact.
Like, how dare you?
Yeah, we said we were gonna do this way. There you go. Mm-hmm. Doing just the opposite. All of you.
The next paragraph, it talks about the splintering of dominion and devotion. And now,
yes,
we know that this was odium. We know this from the letters in Stormlight and Wobbs and the like. So sometimes I forget how much is actually like book canon and how much is Wobb canon.
Yeah, it's hard to keep track of all those.
So
we still don't know how he did it.
No.
That is a big question. So if you're listening from the future and you do know, we are all so jealous.
Yeah.
Yeah, and my friends from the Sandersonian... Friends from the Sandersonian Institute of Cosmere Studies have been discussing in their podcast that actually they feel or they think that this was an act of, like, a trial for him. Like, he was... Kind of seeing what would happen if I just do this and that with these guys and oh no, I don't know what to do with that, shoving into the cognitive realm. Because he did like a different, I don't know if a better job of it with other shards that he splintered and destroyed. But this was like the first attempt at destroying the competition. So it was roughly made, rough around the edges.
I just picture Odium doing that, and then just like you got two bodies that he's just trying to like shove into a closet. It's like crap. And like the closet is just the cognitive realm where he's like, oh my god, no, I hope no one finds this, and like trying to close the door.
Yeah, hiding the evidence beneath the carpet.
Yeah.
So yeah.
But yeah, sorry, you were gonna say something actually serious, Shay.
Like, we do know Odium, Race went after Ambition first, because of course. But that didn't work at first. We don't know what happened there.
Gosh, I'm just thinking how many questions we have.
I know. And went for Dominion and Devotion. I mean, probably he went for Dominion, but well, Devotion just happened to be there, so like, okay, fine.
Aw, poor Devotion.
And splintered them, but Race was inexperienced, of course, and so we like stuffed the investiture into the cognitive realm, while creating all these problems we talked about before.
I wonder about the personalities of Aona and Sky, because in that letter in which we learn that, in a letter in which Hoyt is saying, yeah, because remember what happened to Aona and Sky, they were splintered, it was a disaster, they were killed, and it was a massacre. I want to know what was the relationship between Aona and Sky. I want to know what were their personalities. What was their relationship with Hoyt and the rest of the guys? Mm.
Yeah, because we know that some shards were, like, in relationship and stuff.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And so, don't know if they were in a relationship. If they were, I think we know that, oh my gosh, AT and...
Leras.
They were at least friends at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. They were, speaking of AT and Leras, though, like, some people insist that there has to be a relationship between those two. Most notably, Matt from the 17th Shard,
a romantic one
on the Discord and forums.
So sad
that there has to be a relationship between those two, especially. And so it was funny because on the stream we got a new WAP about someone asked her, like, why did Aten Leras create a planet rather than settling on one that was already there?
They wanted to try parenthood.
Brandon's phrasing just made Matt immediately go, more evidence for the theory that those two were in a relationship.
Oh my gosh. Why do I feel like that's them, like, creating a child? Is like, right, we're gonna go off and make our own little planet, and it's gonna be so cute, and, like, part of me and part
basically
of you. But also, like, the betrayal then of, like...
Yeah. But Ati was a good pana.
That hurts.
Ati was a good pana. He was consumed by the ruin.
Yeah, so it's just, it's sad. Because, I mean, then mm-hmm. you get into, like, the whole discussion that Hoyt has of, like, which has more power, like, the vessel or the shard. And you can really see
Ate's
corruption there.
I agree mm-hmm. with Che.
Yeah, so just, like, that, the fact that they might have been in, like, a relationship, and even if they weren't, that they were, like, very good friends, like, that just hurts more. Like, oh.
We don't know. Aon and Sky, Ati and Leras, they were all, like, people, they were, when they were people, this was like how many thousands of years before everything that we have read. I mean, yeah. Elantris is pretty old. The story that we see in the book Elantris is pretty old mm-hmm. It's like in the ancient of, the most ancient of them all, of the stories.
Yeah, so
the
Cosmere timeline goes Dragonsteel / Lie of Partenel, all that.
Blah, blah, blah.
The Shattering, then White Sand, and then Elantris, and then there's like a 1,000-year jump.
Oh my god.
To Mistborn. Because Elantris is happening just about the time the Lord Ruler is taking power.
We're going to have to make like a graphic for our website that's like literally like the timeline. Yes. Like where you have like the history of like different empires and stuff. Because I just can't picture when things are taking place.
It's not very clear, if actually.
Yeah, but and especially since that. Like, then you have to consider how long ago this like the Shattering of Adonalsium was. Because, like, they said that this all, like, Dominion and Devotion were splintered in human prehistory on Elantris, and Elantris is one of the oldest books that we have. So yes. It is so far back already, and that's after they'd been existing here. And so it's just, like, my mind is blown with, like, how long ago this was.
Yeah.
And the fact that Hoyt is still sane-ish and running around.
Yeah.
I don't know how sane he is. He's got some sort of coping mechanism going on. Yeah. I mean, all that bantering with everyone and being basically, that's a coping mechanism. Because he's fed up with people. Yeah, but the closest thing we have to a timeline is something that I saw, I think, in the Coppermine, like an interactive map of Roshar with a beautiful timeline. But it's only for Roshar. But only that includes
No, they updated that one recently.
Yeah. It includes the Shattering of Adonalsium, but it doesn't mention other Cosmere books.
Yeah, and those dates are all speculative, like the dates for the Shattering and all that.
Yeah, but they
I know Jafu who has worked out like all the timelines, but those dates are speculative because we have nothing from back then. And it's going to be forever till we see Dragonsteel, so.
Oh my gosh. Yep. This is just questions galore.
Thanks, Brandon. Like, not sarcastically, but seriously, like, it's really fun to be able to theorize and be active in the fandom right now.
Well, if you're not going to say it, I'm going to say it. Thanks, Brandon. Just, like, we got to get that sarcasm in there, too.
Oh, also.
It's so fun, but also, I'm just sitting here wanting to bang my head against a wall, going, I don't know, I don't understand, I need answers.
I'm just gonna go and say thanks, Brandon. I'm so happy with these folks. No matter
got,
what,
like, the three different vibes going on.
Yeah, it's amazing and frustrating at the same time.
Yeah.
I just want to add that I was vibrating and screaming out of excitement whenever I read this for the first time. I was like, oh my god, look at all this information.
Yeah.
Scratching my nails into the walls out of excitement.
Yes.
I love the Arcanum Unbounded. It's amazing.
Yeah. So, going on to, I guess, our most recent episode was Emperor's Soul.
Wonderful episode.
Notes that I had written down while I was reading for the first time, which is just mainly that, like, I think we were talking about it previously, that Emperor's Soul really does kind of bring a lot of Brandon's different writing styles in. Like I said, it reminds me kind of like Navani's plotline in Rhythm of War, but the court system is more Warbreaker. And so you get these different, like, tastes of, like, Brandon's style without having to commit to, like, Stormlight and, like, get to Rhythm of War to get this more, like, scientific look at the magic system and stuff like that. So I just really appreciate that, and I wanted to point it out again.
That he has his tropes and he goes with them, but kind of changing them and recreating them in different ways. I always say that.
Yeah. Just as long as we could throw the, like, romantic love triangle out the window. that would be appreciated. Like, keep all the other ones. Toss that in the bin.
Which is funny considering the other day, regarding something in real time, they're like, I don't like love triangles. And I was like, Brandon, but you've written so many
of them. You've written so many. What do you mean? Oh my god. Yep. And then, oh, yeah, because we were discussing a lot of, like, fate or fortune in our Skadrial episodes. And mm-hmm. so since this is coming, mm-hmm. like, after those, I was curious to see, like, how the idea of, like, rewriting history almost, which is what they do in Emperor's Soul with the stamps, mm-hmm. where, like, convincing an object that they have a different history. I'm curious how that would be connected to fate or fortune if you'd be able to change someone to be more kind of lucky or more fortunate. If that would work, or change someone's fate through a stamp.
Hmm.
Yeah, that would certainly be interesting.
Like, well, fortune and fate, they involve the future, while the history mm-hmm. that you change with these stamps involves the past.
Yeah, but I don't think so,
anyway. Because I feel like fate and fortune mm-hmm. are more like absolute attributes, that if said character has this fate, they have it, like, in the existence of the Cosmere, they have it. That's my theory.
Bring up Kaladin as good as the spirit?
Oh my god,
I was picturing Kaladin in my head when I said character may or may not have.
I was thinking of the question of whether Gavilar stole Dalinar's fate or something like that. Yeah. Where, like,
well,
if you can, I think what was getting to me was the idea of if you can change something in the past to affect the present, mm-hmm. then how does that not then affect the future?
The future.
I have something to say to this, because it's not as if you change the real event. For example, let's make this an example. Mm-hmm. If you have a window, and it's a very boring window with just nothing, just a simple mm-hmm. window. If you want to change it to look like more beautiful or more decorated or more artistic or whatever, or you want to give it a special, like, style, what you do is not change the real past, like the actual past as the arrow of time. You don't change real life events.
Mm-hmm.
When that window was made, that was made in that boring way, and when you change it with the stamp, the way it was made did not change. Real history did mm-hmm. not change, but the way that this, like, that the cognitive aspect of the window is built in the cognitive realm, that is rewritten. So it's not as if you can change, I don't think you can change the future with the stamps, because what you change is the way that something considers itself to be. So mm-hmm. if something considers itself to be different, that doesn't make the artist or the builder who made the window someone with different skills or with different ideas at the time they made the window. I don't know if that's clear, but I think that the destiny, the fortune, the fate that we see in the Cosmere as big questions, big raffles, big stuff that we don't know anything about, I think they are more absolute concepts. And since they are more absolute, I think that in order to steal them, you need to use something else, like a spike.
Yeah, I don't think you'd be able to, like, actively steal someone's fate or fortune with this. Again, I completely understand what you're saying, and, like, that absolutely could be true. So
there's this hemalurgic chart in which there's a metal that says may steal destiny with a capital D and question signs. So, yeah.
So
even
because
that's a may, that could be bait. That could be Branderson being a chaotic pastor than baiting us, but
I
just swallow it. I just go with it and swallow it and just build stuff.
I don't know.
From it.
The hemology. Nah, hemology in general is just confusing.
I will say, when I posed this question, I did not expect an answer. I don't think we will come to a conclusion on this.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I tried to look for wobs on it, but I couldn't find any. But I think that, like, yes, in certain ways it will change the future, because you can't not change some things in the future by changing the past, right?
Mm-hmm.
But also,
because I'm picturing kind of like Taravangian's diagram, and like almost like the, like, maps where it's like you pick yes or no, and then that branches you off into, like, other options.
Oh, an algorithm. And
yeah.
And so, like, if you change one part of the algorithm so that someone encounters something different, or a different form of that thing, then that sends them on a different path. and kind of how Renarin we see, like, kind of messes those up, so you can't see what paths people are taking.
That's exactly and what I was thinking.
So I don't think you'd be able to alter someone's destiny or fate or fortune, like, incredibly. Like, they're going to go completely different. It just kind of edges them in a different direction, or might have them make a different choice. And so I'm curious to see if we ever see that. I don't think it's powerful enough, like a hemorrhagic spike.
Exactly.
Where someone can just be like, nope, my destiny now.
Mine.
Because as we see with like the Emperor, that you have to like really know it really well. And so to change a person would be difficult.
And it also has to be plausible enough. Like you can't just change something radically. Mm-hmm. So...
Yeah, and something else. If we make a little comparison with the Wheel of Time, without going into spoilers, the Wheel of Time
we'll see if we can.
Yeah, I think we can. But the Wheel of Time is something in which, so far as I have read, which is book six, you clearly see that there's like a fate and a course of action that takes place in a certain way, and that is something that just happens that way. Like when you have a prophecy, the prophecies they get fulfilled, the prophecies, but in the Cosmere, whenever we see someone who can, like, access future sight or predict the future or something like that, it's always portrayed in a more probabilistic way. I never get the vibe that a shard or a character with a lot of power looks into the future and says, oh, look at what number the lottery is going to throw up tomorrow. Yeah. They are always like, there's an amount of probability that this will happen connected to all of these other probabilities, and that branches in the same way as you said, Ilana. But even if that branched structure gives you, like, sorry for being redundant, but a structure and a certain path in which events occur, I think that the Cosmere is much more tied to probabilities than other sagas, like the Wheel of Time. Which is not
and so that,
like that.
That is definitely kind of something I was trying to get to, where you just put it in a much better way than I did, where I think if you changed, like, the past of something, you might end up shifting the probability from, like, 55 to 45 to, like, 60 to 40. But I don't think it would be, like, you go from, like, a 50-50 to a 100-0 type thing.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, with the even with the Wheel of Time, the pattern and the wheel leaves space for free will. And so while each turning is similar, like incredibly similar, and we'll get the same stories over and over, they are slightly different depending on the actions that each person takes. And so it's not that the character's lives are dictated by what the pattern wants, as much as you say the wheel weaves as the wheel wills, because the pattern does leave space for...
Unless you are Taverin. Because when you are Taverin, you try to escape and... The pattern says, nope.
Yeah, you've got kind of like but a gravitational pull in the pattern.
Yes. And so, like, Taverin has less control than anyone else. But the pattern does leave space for free will. So I think that's a bit the case here, where, like, sure, you can change things, but you're not going to change things so radically, like that 100-0 that Ilana was talking about. Just, like, little tiny things that aren't going to make a huge difference overall.
Yeah. Definitely.
Unless you are a masterful chess player like some characters that we have seen taking advantages of this probability system.
I think this is why Taravangian infuriates me so much.
Yeah.
But, okay, I did not mean for us to spend so much time on this question. I thought it would just be kind of like a, interesting sort of thing.
It's a beautiful question.
So.
I don't remember which of you did this, but I think it's really interesting how Shai prays to an unknown god.
Yeah, with capital letters.
Yes. And so we've heard the terms the god beyond or the unknown god in other places. And we know this god beyond is worshipped on like multiple shard worlds. And there's this belief that is a greater god of the universe beyond like entities like the shards. And we don't know what they have to do with the Aedon Alcium or the Beyond. So, lots of questions.
I think this reminds me a bit of Sazed and his relationship to his followers in Era 2. Where he's kind of like, yeah, I mean, I'm a shard and I have, like, this power, but I also don't really want people spending a ton of time praying to me or doing stuff. And kind of, like, insinuating that, yeah, he is a shard and he is kind of like a god. but almost like a lowercase g god. He's not like the all-seeing god that like more like our like Abrahamic religions kind of believe in, where he has like more limited power. He can't like affect other worlds, and so I thought that was kind of interesting.
Well, he is aware that he is a fraction of something bigger, and therefore like, something more powerful.
Like the gods in the gods, like lowercase g gods in the Cosmere, well, the shards aren't this like all saying, and we know that we won't get an answer to this because Brandon wants to leave it up to interpretation. But like we also know that's like related to like Yasna's beliefs, right? How she acknowledges that the shards are beings of incredible power, all that, but she doesn't see them as God, and that she would need proof of this capital G God to like change the way she thinks about things. And like I find like this relationship really interesting, where we have these lowercase g gods whose effects are very, very visible throughout the Cosmere, and then this god beyond who we don't know, but seems to be capital G god.
Yeah, I think because to me, okay, I'm trying to figure out how to word this. The shards, when you first start reading, I think seem like, oh, these are gods, like they are so powerful. Mm-hmm. And the more you read, the more human they seem to become.
Yes.
And I think it's very similar to kind of how you see like the deification of, oh my god, I think of survivors on Kelsier.
Yeah.
Like the deification of Kelsier happen, where he is elevated to the same level in Era 2 as Sazed, even like higher, because Sazed isn't like widely worshipped. And they're kind of seen as like, oh, that's a bit odd. Like, okay. Like, at least you're not one of the people that still worship Ruin and, like, the original Empire and Lord Ruler. But, like, you're not doing the mainstream survivorism worship. And so I think it's interesting to see how that develops. And the more that you read, the more you're like, oh, so there was, like, human relationships happening here / dragon relationships, because apparently there are dragons.
And, real like, dragons, not like in Wheel of Times.
Yeah, you see, like, you see the more, like, just human aspects of them, where it's like, there was drama, and there's infighting, and there's, like, people they're just being perfect. Stupid at times.
People not liking each other as well.
Yeah, and so it's easier to see them as, like, these lesser deities than, like, the one, like, unknown god. Because it's like, how could an unknown god, based off of, like, if you're coming from a Christian or, like, Islamic background, this idea of, like, this omnipotent, like, all-seeing, all-powerful god, where it's, like, it doesn't really click. And I know that Brandon is coming from a Mormon background, and so it's interesting to see kind of, like, how he builds this world out.
Yeah, definitely. It's fascinating, really, the way Brandon treats religion in his books, and we see that most of all in Elaine Triss, and, well, also in Era 1 with Sazed, but we see a lot of that in Elaine Triss, and we talked about that a lot on our Elaine Triss episode.
Yeah, so I don't want to, like, go through and rehash everything, but I think it's interesting, especially since we're seeing this new character in the same world that is going past, like, the whole, like, idea of Domi, and I can't remember what the other one was, that Harathen... Jadeth, yeah. Those two that seem to almost be stand-ins for dominion and devotion.
Dominion and devotion, yeah.
And then you get this one that's like, no, we are praying to the unknown god, the like one that's greater than all of this, and that sees the magic as more of like, kind of like how Dresden put it, like an engineering system almost, where it's like, yeah, I understand how it works and I use it as a tool, but I don't put any religious significance on it, really. And so I think it's really fascinating to be following a character like that, that is kind of Yasna-esque in this world.
Only not actively challenging religion like Yasna does at every turn.
Yeah. Yasna does not know when to hold her tongue and just like, girl, you do not have to fight everything at every turn.
Harsher.
Yeah. Oh my god. We're not even going to discuss that right now.
No.
but yeah. Kind of like how they're constantly calling her heathens and stuff, for like, she's like, I'm just using the power to its full ability. The fact that you won't is not my problem.
Yeah, let's skip over the Svakis part, because I need to make sure of some things before that, and talk about the Ars Arcanum. So in the original edition of Elaine Triss, we don't get an Ars Arcanum. We just get the glossary definition with the Aeons and all that. We do get an Ars Arcanum later,
in the 10th anniversary.
The 10th anniversary edition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's not too much added because, like, she just goes in, I think it's about a, like, page front and back, and then you just go to, like, the regular glossary of the Aeons.
I think the most interesting thing here is initiation. Because, like, Chris explains the way the Aeons work, like, in a very, like, scientific way. But she also brings up some very interesting questions about the Aeon Door.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we have intent. Yeah, she brings up the importance of intent and also spiritual connection to Aerolon.
Yeah, as she lays it out, you've got the four things that she really discusses, which is precision, intention, birthplace, and initiation.
And to me, initiation is the most fascinating of those.
Mm-hmm.
And it's what we were talking about earlier, how it's not related to descent and, well, then the posterior, like, snapping that happens, like, on Scadrial.
Mm-hmm.
It's not related to Ashar's decision, like, on Nalthus with endowment.
Yeah.
And, like, even Tal'Dane's and Vax's method do not seem to apply here. Now, we have no idea what Vax is. Presumably, yeah. A planet. Brandon refuses to answer about Vax.
Of course he does.
But and we've only ever heard it mentioned one other time in secret history.
He put it there because he likes to mess with us. Like, I can't think of any other reason than just, like, I'm going to give you this tidbit of information and not give you anything else so you just drive yourself crazy.
I can imagine him cackling like a villain.
Yeah, let me just straight out asked him in 2017, like, can you tell us something about Vax? He's like, no, I can't tell you anything about that, but I can give you a raffle card for not telling you anything about Vax. They're very interested in Vax. Everyone's interested in Vax, but I stay very close-lipped on Vax. Like, Brandon, we want to know.
Like, no duh, we're interested. You give us one line in, like, an updated anniversary edition of an Ars Arcanum, and that's it.
Oh, and, well, secret history, but... Yeah. Yeah.
This man.
Like, every single question about Vax is a raffle. Or, well, Brandon giving a very Aes Sedai answer, and...
Hate him.
Oh, God, it's like, Argent, is Vax a planet? It's clearly suggested that it is. Brandon, what's that? It's heavily suggested that it is. It is heavily suggested that is a place.
Oh my god.
It's a place. Okay, I'll take that. Talking to an attendee. Vax is a place. No. Heavily suggested that it's a place. It's what I said. Like, Brandon!
Dude.
We do know Laris would recognize that and left us if Vax is a good place to get vaccines. It's like, everything is like raffle after raffle after raffle.
Yeah.
Like, at some point he even says, I'm not going to answer about Vax. And it's like, Brandon! No, we have no idea.
I love how he's trolling us.
And he says he's not a troll. It's like, yeah,
oh, sure. He absolutely is.
Yeah, everything. Like, I just literally looked up Vax and Arcanum. Every single question about Vax is either a raffle or no, I'm not going to answer.
Okay, as much as I'm having fun talking about this, we do need to probably move along.
Yeah. So regarding initiation, like, I do think, even if Chris hasn't realized it, or, well, doesn't mention it here, I do think it is related to being particularly devoted to something. Now, who knows what it's like for a forger, or for a blood sealer, or for someone who practices Cheishan, or even a Dakor monk, but, like, I do think it was important to mention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So, looking at what else we have to talk about, so we've covered the Ars Arcanum, so moving on to Shards on Cell.
So the main thing is the scene later, like, when we go see the shard pool, right? We know that we see a Neon Rayo on the door, which means spirit or spiritual energy shard pool. That's pretty self-explanatory for the people who know about the Cosmere. Now, it's funny how Brandon had no idea what he was going to use shard pools for at this time when he wrote Elantris, because shard pools were very different before Aether of Night. But, I mean, it's pretty self-explanatory. That's the relationship between the Aeon and what happens there. Now, Raoden is also very confused about the Seance, which again, we don't have answers to, but he does think of how the Saeons are reflections of God's love for his people, and through their service, they were much closer to heaven than their supposed masters could ever really understand.
So, splinters.
Yeah, basically. Like, I do think there's something more going on with the Saeons, especially because of this, like, new information we have from Rhythm of War.
That they can work in Roshar, basically.
Mm-hmm. How they did that, we don't know, because Brandon has said that's not normal, but...
Yeah, if you would have asked me before Rhythm of War, I would have said, no, that's not legal, that's not something that can happen. You can just bring one of those.
Yeah, I don't think we will know. Yeah. Maybe Stormlight 5, because, like, seems that Chalan is gonna hunt down the Ghostbloods.
I mean, I think it could be interesting.
We're gonna have to wait.
We could see a combination of Hemalurgy happening there, where we were saying that because the, like, world is becoming more self-aware, if you'd be able to, like, spike a place.
Oh.
I almost wonder if they spiked a place and then put it in the Saeon somehow, because... Well, the Ghostbloods are being run by Kelsier, which we now know from Rhythm of War. So, like, if anyone has the power to do that, that would be him.
Yeah, this is Metal Mind's business also, with the connection that you can tap and the connection. Oh,
yeah, like,
I was
going to
say something about secret history, so no.
Yeah. Now, like, what does this box around the Saeon in Rhythm of War, like, for? Brandon has said it's important. How did they get the Saeon off the Langes, especially considering, well, the cognitive realm there? There are lots of questions.
I hope it's a sort of fae reel. I really hope that box is a fae reel, but a cosmic one, not one from Roshar.
Who even knows? But, yeah. So, back to the scene with the pool. We see a mural, and I do want to read it. So it depicted a large mirror-like blue oval, the shard pool. An Elantrian stood facing the oval, his arms outstretched and his eyes closed. He appeared to be flying towards the blue disc. The rest of the wall was black, though there was a large white sphere on the other side of the oval. Elantrian, like, starts talking, and... But that mural is very interesting, particularly because it reminds me of the one in Dawnshard. Now,
exactly, yeah.
I can go and look for that quote really quickly, but I... I'm wondering what that, like, white sphere is, because, like, of course the blue pool is devotion shard pool, but what is that, like, white sphere?
Yeah.
What's, like, behind it?
Yeah, I wonder if it could be Dominion's shard pool or something, or Dominion's perpendicularity.
I think that's connected to the shard pool, the perpendicularity.
Well, yeah. But if each one has a perpendicularity, I don't think we've seen Dominion's yet, have we?
No, I don't think so.
No.
Okay, on the wall they found strange murals. People with hands forward falling through what appeared to be portals, emerging into light. Not far from these they entered a small room. It was immediately drawn to the incredible mural that dominated the far wall. It depicted a sun being shattered into pieces. Cord showed her the set of shard plate. So the whole thing of, like, people with hands forward falling through what appeared to be portals kind of reminds me of the Elantrium with their hands out towards the perpendicularity.
Yeah.
So that could be a connection there. Yeah. So. I mean, I wonder, did we see a mural at the, in Skadriel? Whenever Vin...
No, I don't think so.
I don't remember any.
There is one in Mistborn. Yeah, I just searched mural on the Coppermine and gave me a list of all the articles that have that word in them. It says, in the description of Credit Shaw, says, one part of the palace contains a large domed room with many murals, including a mountain, a large cavern, a pool of light, and something very dark.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, yeah, clearly there are murals on many places relating where shard pools are.
Yeah, because, I mean, wasn't Credit Shaw built over?
Yes.
Yeah. So it seems to be that where a lot of the perpendicularities are, you have a mural depicting what it is, I guess, for people to learn how to use it. So I wonder if we would see a similar mural in, like, rocks.
The Horn Eater Peaks.
Yes. Yeah, the Horn Eater Peaks.
Yeah, like, it's interesting because Cord is in the scene, so Cord should know.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, she should.
Oh, I guess technically this was Dawnshard a perpendicularity, or was it just where a Dawnshard was?
No, it's where the Dawnshard was, which it's not a perpendicularity, but I mean, the mural, like, seems to be depicting that.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting. Like, I think we know that there's something, I can't find the exact bulb, but I have heard that there's something in Elantris that the fandom is missing that Brandon hasn't been asked about. And I think that with these like mural connections that we're starting to see, and with the importance of the Dawn Shards, it might be related to that.
Yeah, because we know that there's, what, 4 Dawn Shards?
Yes.
Yeah.
And so we've seen at least 3 murals.
Yes. Like, not all the murals are the same.
No, that's true. Because you have 2 murals at Dawn Shard. You have the one that depicts the perpendicularity, and then you have the one that depicts the breaking of Adonalsium.
Yeah, and they're different, but they all have the perpendicularities on them. It's so... Yes.
Mm-hmm. I think this is something to keep an eye on. I don't think we'll find an answer right now, but going forward, we definitely need to keep an eye out for other murals. I think it's interesting how we see the perpendicularity function to bring people to, like,
so
the spirit world.
We know
almost
that the Elantrian that,
like, it takes their spirits away.
Shard pool during that scene. We see him later in Oathbringer. He's the lighthouse keeper in Shazmar. It's not Pooley. Pooley is someone else. Oh god, I forgot.
Yeah, I want to remember his name.
Right, I know. Yes.
So this guy, he was the one repeating all the time, we were so beautiful, beautiful, we were so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was in Oathbringer, fully, like, recovered, sane, and okay, just acting normal.
So I wonder if being connected, I don't know, because Elantrian seemed to be connected to devotion.
Yes.
And, as opposed to, like, dominion more? I could be wrong on that, but maybe, like, when he passed through perpendicularity, being, like, connected and returned to more of, like, dominion's power, the devotion's power, that he was able to kind of complete the transition to a full Elantrian before he traveled.
Yeah, and we know he became part of the Eyrie from Wobbs, because I looked him up on the cover mind. Yeah, so Ryaino is one of the world hoppers we see, and the other one is Galadon, who we see in the Ishik interlude of
Shout
World
out
of Kings.
To Cal.
Now, how in the... Oh god, there are so many mysteries with the 17th shard, but how did Galadon get off Zell? How did he become involved with the 17th shard? What even is the 17th shard, other than, like, the fan website? We have no idea. But I think it's worth it to point out that Galadon is, like, one of the two, well, main world hoppers we see from Zell.
He's the world hopper that we probably know the most about just because he is a larger character.
Yeah, as for the door, we've covered a lot of this with the essay, but we do see this thing that we've been talking about with the door being trapped in the cognitive element, looking for escape a lot with Rayodin's plotline. And, like, these, like, attacks he starts getting. And, like, how the door, like, wants to, like, escape. How it exists in this place, like, full of pressure, Rayodin puts it.
And, like, as Chris put it, it's, like, polarized. So it makes sense that you've got these two forces constantly pushing against each other to create this pressure.
Yeah, and, well, the other main thing that we haven't covered is, well, the seance. Rayodin describes the seance, and in a way that's very similar to Sprint, how they are bonded to their masters, and how they go mad when their masters are taken by the Sheod. So, it's a very similar relationship then we see with Sprint.
Yeah, definitely.
And our final big point is Hoid. Of course, because we always have to bring up Hoid.
Yep.
So we see him twice in this book. Well, once if you don't have the 10th anniversary edition. Mm-hmm. He's a beggar that is helping Serini with her widow's trial.
And he looks kind of old.
Yeah.
Well, he's not.
Is it this time
he's
when he's
in disguise.
Bald?
I mean, he's very, but...
I mean, yeah. He is old, but he doesn't look that old.
Yeah, because, I mean, I remember reading this, and then everyone being like, did you see Hoid? And I'm like, the weird old guy? Yeah. And they're like, he's so cool, isn't he? And I'm like, why are we all getting so excited for this dude? Like, I don't. He's just a weird beggar man.
I love that.
He comes off so much more, like, suave and charming in, like, Roshar.
Yeah. And I love that Sanderson in Institute of Cosmere Study, the very first episode of that show is called What's a Hoid or something like that.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
And that's the big question, you know, because you start reading the Cosmere and everyone is like, pay attention to Hoid, pay attention to Hoid. He's so interesting. We all love him. What's a Hoid? An old guy? a beggar, he's always pretending to be a beggar.
I mean, those are the people that go, like, unnoticed, so it makes sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he is pretending to be a beggar that helps with Sereni's widow trial. He's the one that's mm-hmm. moving boxes in and out of Elantris for her, and is a bit more perceptive about things than she would like. And then
you have a note about... she know.
And then Hoid shows up at the shard pool and talks with a Skazi, which, as far as I know, is the only time that we see a Skazi.
Yes.
And they mention Hoid promised them that he'd achieve initiation, which is interesting considering the fact that, like, initiation seems to be somewhat tied to birthplace. Mm-hmm.
There's some tricks done with connection that you see performed by Elantrians mm-hmm. in secret history or on secret history, I don't know. Mm. But,
no, and, the and
those are not things that we are clear of how they work. I mean, there are tricks that are done. We know that those are tricks that allow you to do stuff that you shouldn't be doing if you are not in the country or in the region of Elantris. But we don't know how that works so much.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of theories, but nothing consistent for now.
Yeah. And then in this, Hoyt also gives us like our first look at how the perpendicularity really works in order to like have people travel instead of just like putting sick people in there and seeing what will happen. So yeah, once again Hoyt is giving us more information,
jumps in,
which we appreciate.
Yeah, but I think it's really interesting how Dilaf also mentions the Skazi at some point, and it's clear that the Skazi have like control of the Fjordal Empire. And so it's interesting how Hoyt has managed to sway not one of them, but so many of them, and how he's promised them he'd achieve initiation, because that's... It's very interesting, because, I mean, imagine... I remember listening to something, and they were like, imagine the implications of a Darkhorn monk able to achieve initiation in Aeon Dor. That would be
terrifying,
scary.
Yeah.
And like, what could Hoyt himself do with Aeon Dor? Because Aeon Dor, as I've stated multiple times, is a very powerful magic if you are a master Elantrian and are on your home base. So
yeah, they are ridiculously powerful. So while that has implications for further down the line...
it has lots of implications, but there's not much else we can say on that because we know so little.
So I think we've covered most of what we wanted to. Do we want to get to some listener questions?
Yeah.
Great. Yes. We had some amazing people send in some questions, and we really appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
So, Kipton from... Where did Kipton come from?
The Legendarium Discord.
Legendarium Discord. It says, what do you think Shell... Oh my god. Shell. What do you think Shell's cognitive plane looks like?
We know Skadriel, well, from Secret History, it looks like mists, right? And we know Roshar from, well... all of Stormlight is like these like beads, and so other than the huge like plasma storm like raging through Cell's like cognitive realm, because that's a given, I am not sure how it would look like in normal circumstances.
I think it would look
beyond the
very
plasma storm.
Different, like you would have the very set boundaries between where like one power starts and ends, and then it would be down to that sort of thing. What the individual places would actually look like, I'm not sure. But because you have, like,
theory.
The mists and the, like, spheres in the other places, which is basically how people have harnessed the power, I think you would have a lot to do with, like, almost more seons, I guess, in, like, Elantris. And, like, I'm not sure how exactly that would work, but... Yeah, it would be...
It would be interesting if it were, like, be, like, full of, like, the different symbols, right? Like, so, the Aeons and Irulan and the, like, the map of the Maipan Empire for, well, the Rose Empire, and, like, the different, like, Fjordal like, symbols that are carved on the Darkhorn Monk's, like, bones. I think that would be really interesting.
Definitely.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I have never asked this question to myself, so I don't have a theory or an answer prepared, but now that we are discussing it and... Now that I'm thinking about it, what I picture is something with very weird and very, very different architecture in the cognitive realm, because I can picture like as if you were looking at the landscape, you would see that the places, the lines that the buildings made on the streets, when you are walking, not when you're looking like from above, when you're walking in the city, in the cognitive realm, I could imagine them being with very straight and set lines and angles that reflect the different aeons that have made the magic in the city of Elantris. I'm speaking about the city of Elantris. So I could imagine either that or something similar to what we see in the cognitive realm in Shadesmar, in which the sprint, they have these bigger forms and shapes and everything is like weirder in there. So I could imagine like floating aeons just moving around the place and like transforming into the different modification that you need to make them to make them the magic happen. So I don't know, since aeons look so much in my head similar to kanjis from the Japanese, Korean and Chinese language but different, I could imagine those symbols walking on the streets. That would be amazing.
That would be fascinating. Interesting.
Yeah,
like kind of a bit like, I imagine them a bit like cryptics, like walking.
Yeah, like pattern heads just floating around and changing because they have to change in order to be like more accurate. And it's a very difficult question.
And then our good friend Cal from our Discord says, how do you guys think the magic kung fu works with the general, it has to be a map rule for the magic systems in that planet?
So he's talking about Shaishan, and we know from the descriptions that, what's his name, Sailway? I forget the name of the noble that uses Shaishan, but
yeah, whatever,
it's like circular movement. So I think, thing is, we don't have the map for the place he's from, is it Jindo?
Yeah, I believe so.
So we don't have that map, so we don't know how it looks, but I do think it's a similar thing where, like, with, like, the arm movements and the circles they draw, like, they draw in the air, but, like, the aeons, but like not with just like your finger, but like with your whole movement, the map for Jindo.
Oh, beautiful. Have you seen how in Avatar The Last Airbender, whenever the firebenders or earthbender, they make these katas and these movements and they have like a trace of a line with the water and the fire? I could imagine that if you had like something showing the way that you're moving, like, well, in Avatar, they have the water and the actual fire moving in the direction and in the trajectory that their body moves. I think that it's something like that. You would see the drawing of the map, like, from above, when you look at the way their body is moving.
Yeah, similar to how,
it would be really interesting, like, to see it, like, in 3D rather than, like, the 2D aeons, but see the whole thing. Like, So
yeah,
maybe it's not the map, but, like, maybe it's not, like, the political map or whatever, but the topographical map in 3D, which would be really, really interesting.
Yeah, definitely. And then I think we have one last question.
Yes.
Do you want to give that username a try, Shay?
Asaipul.
I don't know, but from the 17th shard, do you think there's any relationship between Aeon AT, which means hope, and AT, the vessel? They're talking about ruin here.
If there is, it breaks my heart.
I want it to be because he was such a nice pana, such a wonderful fellow, a good guy. So I really want them to say, yeah, let's dedicate this aeon to our good friend Ari, who is definitely keeping control of that terrible ruined shard.
So I think there's a possibility of that, but I also think there's a high possibility that it's a coincidence, like how we have a letter Shash on Nalthis and the glyph Shash on Roshar that are not related at all.
Yeah, but
so
this
I think
is
we have
different.
Both things, and I think the only way we can actually be more certain is until we get to Dragonsteel and we actually see AT, the vessel, and we understand like what his relationship was with Iona, who is a vessel for devotion, and like if there was anything in him that could like be related to hope.
Yeah. I really wanted to be something.
What's so sad is that like he worked so hard to crush hope in like the Mistborn era one, because Vin is like, we still have hope, and he's like, why, just give up? And I'm like, oh, for Ati.
I love how tragic that is.
Oh my gosh, it hurts my heart. But I think we've pretty much covered everything.
You can follow us and contact us through all our social media, of course links are in the show notes. Join the Discord, it's great. Tell us your feedback. Ask us your questions. We always love listening to questions like the ones we got today. They make us think a lot about things we haven't considered before. If you enjoy the show and you can support us, please support us on Ko-fi if you can. The link is also below so we can keep improving. If you've enjoyed the show but you can't support us on Ko-fi, we would love it if you would give us a 5-star review on iTunes since it helps other people find us easier. Make sure to share the podcast with other Brandon Sanderson fans you know, and anyone you want to introduce to the series. We know how hard it can be to try to explain all of this, especially things like the essays, to someone new without overwhelming them.
Yeah, and I have a message. I have a message for our listeners that come from the future, because right now we are in December 2021. So if you're in the future, you know the answers to some of the questions that we consider mysteries now or something. Come and tell us, wow, you sound as if you're into cracking the disco, because it's amazing.
It's funny.
Yeah, it's super funny. And yeah, come bring you. If you have a friend who is getting into the Cosmere and everything is overwhelming, just join everyone into the Discord. It's super fun.
Yeah, it's really funny how throughout this year, at the beginning, I was listening to the old Shardcast episodes. There were so many assumptions and like things I said, like in the Oathbringer episodes, that are like, well, we have the answer to this as of Rhythm of War, so it would be funny to see what new knowledge you can bring from the future.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely.
Thanks for listening, and remember, from all of us here, journey before destination.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.